Hey there, dog people of the internet. It's Sarah Stremming, the Cog Dog Coach, and this is Cog Dog Radio. Join me as I cover behavior concepts, discuss training ideas, interview experts, and explore my cases, all regarding the dogs we live and play with. Let's go. A little while ago, I posted a video on my Facebook page and asked my dog pro friends what they would do if the person featured in the video was a client dog of theirs. The video is a popular skit from Saturday Night Live. It features Kristen Wiig playing a woman named Sue. And the skit, the basis of the skit is that Sue gets very excited about impending surprises. So I call her Surprise Party Sue when I am talking to my clients about their dogs who are like Sue. And what I asked my colleagues to weigh in on is, you know, basically, would you try to control Sue? Would you teach her relaxation protocols? What would you do? What would you do if you had this dog? And now I'm going to ask you right now, if you don't know the skit I'm referencing, go watch some of them. They're basically all the same. There are tons of them on YouTube. I'm going to link one in the show notes, but if you bounce over to YouTube and just search Surprise Party Sue, you will find it. And I think that if you are familiar with the skit, you will have better context for this episode. So definitely pause this, go watch a couple of those, laugh super hard, come on back. Now, the responses from my dog pro colleagues were really varied. And of course, that's not surprising because this is a broad field with a broad range of backgrounds and education levels. I also have a diverse friend group. I am not only friends with a certain kind of dog trainer. All kinds of dog trainers are welcome to weigh in. The majority of the responses can be split into kind of two columns. Column one is, oh my God, I love this dog. Or those are my dogs. My dogs are this dog. And those are mostly my dog sport friends, primarily my agility friends, who are saying, yes, we love Sue. We want Sue. Sue is our favorite. And then the other half were like, Sue's not fine. There's nothing okay about this. Sue needs a veterinarian, a veterinary behaviorist. Sue needs medical intervention. Literally, the comments were mostly split into this dog is perfect and this dog needs medication. And that couldn't be more fascinating to me. And so here we are to kind of tear it apart and really break it down. There were, of course, other responses. And one of my favorite ones was from my friend and colleague, Sarah Owings, who pointed out that Sue's behavior in the skit is not dangerous or a problem until it is. And the moment at which it flips is when the other people in the scenario ask Sue to control herself. That's something that I was hoping more people would have picked up on. It is interesting to me how few people did. If you watched it and that's not something you mentioned, this isn't like a call out. This is just me saying, how interesting that so few people picked up on the fact that Sue's behavior went from over the top, obnoxious, socially inappropriate, to dangerous and harmful. And the antecedent switch was that she was being asked to tone it down to control herself when it switched into being harmful. So if you've watched a couple of these skits, you know that the way that they all go is that Sue is in some kind of small gathering of folks. Somebody announces that another person is going to show up and that they're going to surprise that person. The one that I posted on Facebook was a surprise party. They were saying that we're going to plan a surprise party for this person. There's another one in which Sue is at work and the boss is kind of announcing that somebody's going to get a surprise promotion and it's a big promotion. So it all goes the same. We've got kind of somebody in authority saying we are going to surprise somebody who is not here right now. And then Sue begins to just bubble up. She gets hilarious. I mean, Kristen Wiig, comedic genius, right? So she gets hilariously more and more and more excited or anticipatory about this impending surprise. And then at some point, that person shows up and Sue has to stop being so excited because they can't blow the surprise. So every single skit goes like this, is that Sue's getting really excited and everybody's annoyed with her and she can tell that they're annoyed with her, but she can't stop. But then they need her to stop because she's going to blow the surprise. And so they tell her she has to stop. And then that's when she does things like throw herself out of a window, you know, commits other acts of like property destruction or self-harm. So in every single skit, the moment when everybody turns to Sue really angrily and with a lot of urgency and is like, Sue, you have to stop, is when Sue's behavior goes from just being annoying and socially inappropriate to being destructive or harmful. Now, there were plenty of people in the comments who said that Sue needs to be nowhere near this kind of excitement. Lots of people saying this is just not an appropriate environment for her. She needs to go do long walks in the woods. She needs to do nose work. She needs to be nowhere near this kind of arousing scenario. So there were plenty of comments saying stuff like that. There were a couple of comments saying, can we channel this? Can we give Sue a surprise party planning job? I loved those. I actually love both of these comments. Both offering ways to channel these behaviors and also ways to soothe these behaviors, I think are smart ways to think. A couple of people, including a friend of the pod, Connor, weighed in and said, hey, we don't know enough. We don't know. All we know is how Sue is in this particular circumstance, which is a really tough circumstance for her. And only knowing her in this really tough circumstance does not give us enough information about her to say that she needs medical intervention or to even say what kind of intervention she needs. And that's actually totally correct. So if you were one of the people that weighed in, I just want to say thank you so much. It was over 100 comments. It was so much fun to read them all. It just sparked really, really cool, interesting discussions. And you can count on me, I think, to share a few more SNL skits in the future. And if you're wondering where was this, it's because it wasn't on my business page. It was to my friends list. And all of those posts are always public, so you can actually go and find it, even if we're not Facebook friends, and read all of the comments. So I promised everybody that I would weigh in and kind of say my take and what I would do if Sue was one of my client dogs. And just spoiler alert, Sue is my client dog. Sue is a lot of my client dogs and also some of my personal dogs. So I am pretty familiar with dogs like this. And I actually love the skit. I think it's hysterically funny, but I also think that a lot of things on SNL are poking fun at people who are truly struggling, and maybe that's a little bit problematic and we should think about it. But having said all that, I do think largely the skits are lighthearted and that they are funny and that Kristen Wiig is a genius. So this is once again my plug to tell you to go watch all of them on YouTube. Now, my take on Sue is that, first of all, Connor's right. We don't have enough information. So I would want to know, what is Sue like under normal circumstances? Like, what is Sue's home life like? That's actually important, not only for me to gauge how abnormal this behavior is, but also for me to gauge, like, what's Sue's welfare? What's Sue's daily wellness situation looking like? And the reason I'm asking that question is because a lot of the times with dogs that become overly anticipatory of certain events like this, it's because those dogs' lives are too boring. So I've said it many, many times about, say, dog agility, is that if dog agility is the only fun thing in your dog's life, you are going to have big anticipatory problems because the dog's going to be desperate to do dog agility. Sue appears to me to be desperate to engage in surprises. Surprising someone is her favorite. Surprises also have inherent kind of built-in anticipation, and that anticipation tips easily over into desperation, which there almost the same sort of emotional response, one carrying more negative valence than the other one. So I would say that it is likely that Sue's life is void of both excitement and decompression, and that Sue probably needs both of those things in much bigger measures than she's getting it. She might even be deprived of social interaction. It's possible that Sue gets so excited about surprising somebody else because other people's emotions are not something that she gets to experience enough. She might be socially isolated and therefore, you know, really, really seeking those big emotional moments with other people. So I would certainly want to see about getting Sue involved in doing more stuff with people. And that stuff doesn't necessarily have to involve surprises, but it should involve the other things that surround these surprises, like the social involvement, like the kind of shared planning with others and those sorts of things. I also notice in almost all of the skits that Sue self-soothes with food. So in the one that I shared that sparked this discussion, she is like, oh my God, I need a snack at one point. And somebody opens a chip bag for her and she's like shoving potato chips in her face and she's pouring water in her mouth. And like, she's really trying to self-soothe with food. Sue's quite aware of the fact that she's irritating other people and she's trying to calm herself down. I would capitalize on that. A dog that self-soothes with food is a dog that I can help to soothe themselves in a lot of situations. I can give them a raw bone to lay down and chew on. I can give them a licky mat. Dogs that self-soothe with food are easy for us to soothe in a variety of circumstances, and it can be a really great thing. So if the dog is having the Sue level anticipation of, say, their agility run, and they self-soothe with food, I can ask them to lie down on a mat and chew a bone while we wait, because the waiting period, unfortunately, is necessary. And so I would bank on that. I would also avoid asking Sue to tone it down. I would not put her in situations where she has to keep the secret. That is the problem. The problem isn't that she's having big anticipatory feelings. The problem is that she can't keep the secret quiet because her anticipatory feelings are too big. So about that, I would do a couple of things. Number one, it would kind of be against the rules for me to ask Sue to stop. I would, if we wound up in this kind of situation, ask Sue to leave instead. Hey, come with me. Let's go get an ice cream over here. And now we're having ice cream. We're self-soothing with a snack, which is something that she is likely to want to do. And she doesn't have to be asked to tone it down, stay quiet, control herself. So I'm going to avoid that really problematic antecedent of telling her to keep the secret kind of held inside. And I'm also going to provide appropriate self-soothing outlets like ice cream. A big thing that I would also avoid is adding more social disapproval. Sue knows that she's annoying everyone. You can tell in every single skit that she knows she's a problem. It sucks to be in a social situation and to know that you're the problem. And I think dogs experience this all the time. They're highly social. Most dogs really do care about social disapproval, at least of their people and their other dogs, kind of like within their family. They may not be capable of changing their behavior, though, based on your social disapproval. And so all you're doing is kind of injuring the relationship by piling on more social disapproval. So rather than saying, Sue, my God, what's wrong with you? Get a hold of yourself. It's, hey, Sue, wow, looks like you're having some really big feelings. Why don't you come with me? Let's go down the hall and see what you might want to get out of the vending machine, right? Like, it's that kind of conversation rather than, oh my God, what's wrong with you? Stop it. The social disapproval that is apparent in every single skit also does feed my hypothesis that Sue probably doesn't have enough social interaction. She knows that she's kind of a problem. People might not really like her. They might not really like to hang out with her. And so she feels socially isolated, and it leads to her having less and less of an ability to control herself in these scenarios. And then if Sue was going to be involved in some kind of surprise party, maybe I've given her a job to do. Maybe she is totally involved with the process. She knows what it is. The couple things I'm not going to do, I'm not going to put her in a scenario where she has to keep the secret. And I'm also going to really cut down on the anticipatory time. I am not going to let her bubble up forever. So if this is an agility dog who's bubbling up ringside, I'm not going to have that dog ringside for very long. Dog's going to be in the crate with their licking mat until it's actually time to go, pretty much. And then we're going to get out and you're going to have very structured things to do until it's time for you to go in. And I'm not going to ask you to stand here for 15 dogs bubbling up and getting more and more high about what's about to happen. So I'd offer lots and lots of exciting, fun things that Sue can do that she does get to do that don't involve a lot of anticipatory time. It would be, oh, hey, guess what? We're going to go do this now. And it would be that quick. It wouldn't be, hey, in 3 hours from now, we're going to throw a party. It would be more like, hey, all those cupcakes I asked you to make, thanks so much. I asked you to do that because there's a birthday party and it's happening right now. And then, boom. Big excitement, big anticipatory feelings, but then the party begins and Sue can now relax into the party and just be excited about the party itself rather than continuing to have these big anticipation events. So to kind of recap everything, I would try to make sure that Sue's life is rich with social opportunities, that she gets to have fun and gets to have social engagement with other people, but I would cut down on big anticipation feelings for her. And I would offer her the opportunity to self-soothe with food in ways that were appropriate. Of course, I would pair that stuff with decompression time. When Sue gets to have a party and gets to have ice cream, she then goes home and has some soothing activities to do, like knitting or, you know, watching a favorite sitcom. I would not ask Sue to control herself or to keep a secret. If it became obvious that a secret would need to be kept, I would remove Sue from the environment. That is too much to ask. And above all, I wouldn't try to change her. And I'm not totally sure that she needs to be on medication, but of course she should see a doctor regularly, just like everybody should. I would try to embrace her for who she is instead and channel all of these big feelings appropriately. All right, and a few Patreon questions for you. First one comes from Dinah. Dinah writes, what exactly is a poisoned cue and how do you know it is poisoned and know when to completely retire it for a new cue in training? Okay, so in dog training, a little bit too often, people say poisoned cue to mean a cue that has lost meaning or kind of lost effectiveness. And that's not the true definition, that as far as I know. So the true definition is actually a cue that has kind of a mixed bag of associations. So typically it is a cue attached to a behavior that was trained with a mixture of positive reinforcement and also some sort of punishment, usually positive punishment. So for instance, if you teach sit by luring with a cookie and then giving a cookie, but then also during the learning process, you kind of choke up on the collar if the dog doesn't sit fast enough or something like that. So if you insert a correction in the learning process, you can introduce a mixed bag of feelings that are attached to the cue. So that's what a poisoned cue is. And if a cue has become poisoned or you suspect that it has, you should throw it out. You should stop using the cue. The behavior itself is not what's poisoned. So the cue is, unfortunately, we as dog people often think that our word sit is the, or whatever verbal cue we're using, is the only cue, but probably there are a lot of other cues that you're using in relation to whatever the behavior is you're trying to fix. And so all of the cues associated have probably become poison. You need to kind of come up with a new communication system around that behavior if that has happened. Nina writes, can you please chat more about releasing your dogs by name out of a doorway or from a stay? What are common roadblocks you've seen people run into when teaching this? I think I have the general idea, but haven't started training this yet and want to make sure I'm not missing anything. So Nina, this is involved in a couple of my courses that are available through the membership. So hopefully you'll run over there and check that out. But essentially, teaching dogs to release on a name cue is something that I do initially just with kind of feeding. So I say that dog's name and feed, and then I do it with the dogs and they're not even holding a position at that point. And then I do it with the dogs holding on stations and I release them off the station by their name. And basically if the dog releases off not their name, they just get put back on the station. So then I use it in that scenario. And at doorways, the only roadblock is that when you have dogs like mine, they can get really big anticipatory feelings, kind of like the feelings we just talked about in the episode, and they might not be helpful and you might want to use a different route. So anything that you're using, if you don't actually like the results, you want to change what you're doing. But the roadblock is just basically that the dog is looking at the other cues you're doing, like offering a piece of food or moving, and they're not listening to the words. So they do have to learn how to discriminate and listen for the word that means them, which is their name. Connor writes a deceptively short question. What role does engagement play in decompression walks? So engagement plays a role in literally everything that I do all the time with my dogs. I want them to be highly engaged with me all the time. If they are overly fixated on me, then they're not out decompressing. But if they are not engaged enough, then they are not acting in ways that I would label off-leash reliable. So I need them to always be aware of where I am, to follow me when I turn, to stop when I stop, and things like that. So that's what engagement, that's where engagement comes in. I was recently out on a leash walk with my puppy Carson in a public park. And it's a nice park. It's not overly crowded, but there were definitely, it was a nice day. So there were definitely plenty of things for us to deal with. Little kids on bikes and joggers and people with their dogs and things like that. And I got her out of the car and she was just kind of not paying attention to me. She was just kind of all over the place. And I went, you know, this is that thing where a novice trainer tries to engage this dog and tries to get them to work with them. And I know that she can't right now. And so I'm not going to ask her to work with me. I'm going to watch for glimmers of attention and I'm going to reward those glimmers. Versus one of my more seasoned dogs, if I got Felix out in the exact same park, he would immediately be looking at me going, what are we doing here? Are we doing something good? What do you want from me? And that's because he's 8.5 and I've taught him to be that way. Rhea would be like that too. She's 3. She's naturally more environmental than him. So, but if she were by herself in a park like that, she'd take a good look around and then she'd look at me and she'd say, what are we doing? Carson will also be like that. In fact, she'll probably be more like Felix than like Rhea. And it's because I'm building it, right? So I am growing her ability to stay engaged with me in these environments. This was not an off-leash walk, again, because busy park. So she was on leash. I occasionally prompted her to do things. I always rewarded her for doing what I asked her to do. I also always rewarded her for checking in with me. But I wouldn't have asked her to do much in the way of like what I would call work until the walk was finished, which was a good, 45 minutes long. And so as far as on a decompression walk goes, I don't want them thinking it's work time, but I always want them to have a tab open for me and my information for them. I hope that that answers your question, Connor. Last one this week comes from K-Sand. K-Sand writes, I have a 1-year-old Kelpie who's fine with my son, who's 13, but freaks out when my son's friends come over to our house. He raises his hackles and barks at them and tries to nip at their ankles as they go up the stairs. I can have my dog go to place and he'll lie there trembling and drooling on his place if I'm nearby to drop occasional treats for him. My son has had friends spend the night too and our dog never gets used to them being in the house. He'll bark at them even as they are eating breakfast the next morning. He can kind of be in a crate when they're in the house, but he startles and barks at the noise they make. I'm not really sure what I can do to help him to get used to the kids in the house. The kids are very good at ignoring the dog and have never tried to pet him or play with him at all, and they're not being rowdy or loud. I've had them scatter treats on the ground to see if it would help, but the dog just takes a brief break from barking to eat some of the treats off the floor. So, K-Sand, first of all, you need some good in-person help. So I'm going to answer your question as best as I can, but you need a real plan, and I can't give you a real plan here. So I do hope that you will find it. You can shoot me an email and I can see if I know anybody in your area that can help you, or I can see if I'm the person for you. We can kind of figure that out. But essentially, you need more help than a Patreon question can give you. You have a 1-year-old, very intense herding dog. We had a question from you before, and you are working so hard with this dog, and I want to applaud you for all the hard work that you're doing, but it's a tough dog, right? You're having a tough time. And it doesn't matter that, not to say it doesn't matter. It's great that your son's friends are being so respectful and wonderful. And also, it doesn't matter that they're not being rowdy, etc., because your dog is still really freaked out by them. Your dog is an adolescent, so your dog is built to be freaked out right now as well. The best thing to do would be for your dog to not experience this at all at these over-threshold levels, which means that the dog is put somewhere else with something to do, with some noise canceling stuff going on while the friends are over. And if the friends are spending the night, you make sure that the dog does not have to have interactions with the kids. Does that sound terrible and really hard? Yes, it does. This is why, you know, this is a little bit of an incompatibility issue. This dog is having a hard time fitting into your household. This dog is not designed to be in your household. That's a little bit irrelevant because the dog is in your household. And that's not me telling you that you should get rid of the dog. It's me saying this is an incompatibility issue. The dog would prefer not to be around these kids. The dog is also, again, 1 year of age, and everything is harder when you're a teenager. If you remember being a teenager, you know that. So not allowing the interaction at all, I would absolutely not have the dog be lying on a place. I would not have the kids be trying to feed. I would not be trying to do anything about this at all. I would be protecting the dog from these tough interactions. And the reason that you need some in-person help is because I think you probably need some other types of intervention that I can't give you here that will help kind of get you through this adolescence for this dog. So that's about what I can give you in this format. Best of luck. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for listening. I hope you'll rate, review, and subscribe wherever you heard this podcast. And don't forget to join Patreon at patreon.com/cogdogradio. And if you're interested in more content like the stuff you heard here, I hope you'll check out my online courses, my membership, and all of my offerings at my website, sarahstreming.com. See you there.